Good evening and welcome to the ministry. I am Archbishop Dracul, and alongside me is Father Avram. Our creed is to inspire our parishioners with reflections on the Nintendo Entertainment System. Tonight we are reflecting on a Steinax, which was developed and published by Jalico, and released in North America in March of 1990. Tonight our visiting deacon is once again Mr. Jeffrey Gabor. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
Testament to the creators. Kazuhiro Kawano and Tomoko Kato. Cutscene planning, scripting, and animation. They are rumored to have moved on to development on Totally Rad.
Yeah, apparently that's an ongoing trend with this team, from what we found.
Yeah, much of the team, actually, you'll hear Totally Rad, I think, almost in everybody that we mention. Which brings us to our next one, Kita Komayama, graphic artist, also worked on Totally Rad. Toshiko Tasaki, sound composer. Mafat Conspiracy. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
I don't know. I've never known.
It's either Mafat or Mafat. I'm not sure. Either way, that's a different one. And Totally Rad. For Toshiko as well. So Toshiko worked on both of the soundtracks for those games and a Steinax.
Yes, I have no real experience with the Mafat Conspiracy other than the fact that it's a sequel to Golgo 13, which is a game that I actually really like.
Yes, there is this very interesting one I'm about to mention. Only mentioned in the credits. And it is a mystery. Whoever the programmer is on this game either wasn't credited or did not want to be credited, because the translation for the Japanese and that's written on the screen is a stutter of the word who, followed by am I, and a question mark. So it's literally WH dot dot dot, who am I, question mark.
We'll talk about it more in the hints and cheats section, but you have to get to like the demo screen by inputting a certain configuration on the controller in the beginning, and then you have to run the end credits from there, and then at the very end there's all kinds of Japanese text, and they kept it in Japanese in the US release. They never translated it, so which is why we don't really know who worked on this. If you go through and actually beat the game on your own, you won't see the actual credits. It'll just kind of like stay on the end screen until you hit reset or start. From a like game history point of view, it's very reminiscent of like the Castlevania ending where they spoofed, you know, did like spoofs on names like kind of like Bela Lugosi or Boris Karloff, but they like tweaked the name just a little, and I don't know, from a game preservation standpoint, that really sucks. I wish they didn't do that.
I mean, wasn't there a whole trend back during this era not to credit like programmers and that kind of thing because for poaching reasons? It's like they didn't want their names on there just so another company couldn't like call this guy up and go take him. It was certainly a rumor I heard about.
That sounds plausible. It's interesting because I should mention that particular translation was pulled from thecuttingroomfloor.net. However, if you take the Japanese characters and put it into Google Translate, the translation there is, hey, it's me.
All right. Same effect, though, I guess.
Same effect. But just very interesting that, I don't know, maybe it's a dialect thing, who knows, but it's still just kind of strange, right? Everybody else is credited, but programmer? Nope. Unless we actually, wouldn't it be funny if that's actually, you know, their name? That would be hilarious. Be funny to find out the actual story there.
Yeah, their parents were a really big fan of like the who's on first type thing. What's your baby's name? It's me.
yeah. Oh my goodness.
So moving on to marketing. So the game was met with mediocre review scores from magazines at the time. Electronic Gaming Monthly gave it a 48%. The German magazine called Video Games gave it a 40%. But this is the first game that we've ever talked about from a marketing point of view that actually has a commercial.
In a land of deadly dragons and ghostly skeletons, you are a Styanex, warrior of Rimnia, on a treacherous journey to rescue Princess Rosebud from the evil wizard Blackhorn. Fight the forces of darkness with three magical spells, fueled by five mystical power sources. Master three special weapons through 12 exciting levels of play. A Styanex for the Nintendo Entertainment System. Live action that never ends. From Jalico.
I have a little story to share with you guys.
All right.
So, every day after school, I would fill up a bowl of ice cream and sit in front of the television, and I would watch Ninja Turtles, and I would watch this show called Video Power. I'm not 100% sure if Video Power was a nationwide show, because I know it was recorded in New York. Perhaps we'll do an entire episode on Video Power someday. I think that would be a lot of fun. But Video Power was essentially a video game review TV show before there really was any such thing. And before, obviously, the internet or YouTube. And the guy who hosts the show, his name is Johnny Arcade, would, you know, talk about different games that were coming out and stuff. And it eventually morphed into a game show in the second season. Anyway, I digress. I was sitting there watching, and then all of a sudden, like, this was at the dawn of the Sega Genesis. And I had my eyes on the Sega Genesis because I loved going to the arcades, and I loved the big sprites, and I really loved the fact that you can have those big sprites at home. So I was really, like, longing for the Genesis, but I knew it was very expensive. I think it just had come out. It was around $300, if I'm not mistaken. And I see this commercial, and they had in-game graphics of a game called the Styanex, and they had this big masculine dude with a sword, and he like comes in through the door and is attacking monsters while this kid's playing the game, and then they're cutting to like actual game footage, and I think it actually says actual game footage in the commercial. I could be wrong, but the sprites were gigantic, and I was like, holy crap, this is awesome, and they looked fantastic. You know, they looked fantastic. So I was like, this is it. I need this game. I need it. And I asked for it for Christmas that year. And I have an extension to this story that we will talk about later during the box art section.
I can tell you that that game show played in Colorado. I used to watch that show all the time, man. I loved it.
Yeah, me too. I love that show so much.
Yeah, Video Power. It's awesome.
I remember Video Power, but I remember it as the game show, not as the review show.
Yes, that's because it gained popularity as time went on at the end of the first season, and they must have had this new idea.
I mean, we could digress down this whole road, but man, it was so much better than Nick Arcade. Like Nick Arcade, like that, it was just like a train wreck of augmented VR junk. And it didn't have actually real Nintendo games and stuff, so.
I think I've heard of it, but I never saw it.
Yeah, I mean, they had their own games, but they would basically get these kids. You'd think they'd be in. Now we're going way off. But it's worth looking up on YouTube. If you won the whole show, at the end you'd go and be transported into a video game. Everybody thinks that's what's happening, but looking back, they're just in front of a blue screen and then looking at a monitor off screen, just basically like the news doing the weather. And they're trying to react to things that are being composited onto them. And they're little kids doing this, so they have no idea what's going on. So they just lose all the time because they're confused on what's happening. Yeah, it's worth looking at. But Video Power was better.
As it is, Video Power is kind of like at the very edge of my memory, almost. Going way off the beaten path here. I almost group it in with like Double Dare.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I swear we could talk about this show for an entire episode. We probably should do that.
Yeah. I love that.
I'd like to talk about the commercial a little bit because there's an interesting point here. And Archbishop Dracul and I had this conversation, I think, some months back, way before I think we even talked about starting the podcast, where we were discussing Astyanax and the commercial and had to laugh a little bit because if you listen to the commercial, first of all, I thought the commercial was badass. Like it was as a kid seeing it, I was like, I need to play this game. I need to own it now. This is like everything I ever wanted to do in a video game. They really sold it hard. And, but when you listen to it now from, like, you know, a future lens, it's like, use three weapons. And it's like, if you told any child these days, like, hey, this video game, you can use three weapons, three different weapons. they would, I don't even know what they'd be like, really? Three? And it's like, out of five magical sword. Now it's like you can't even think about selling a video game unless you're like, oh, the spell tree has 10 million combinations with... It's like, ugh.
Yeah, the loot lust is out of control these days.
Yeah, but it's just, it's very funny and nostalgic to hear how simple games were back in the day. It was originally called Lord of King.
Yes, in Japan. Yeah.
Which is an interesting title.
Some other differences between Astyanax and Lord of King, or one of the most noticeable ones, is the U.S. version of the Medusa boss. I believe it's the third boss. She had breasts in the Japanese version, and they got rid of them for the American release for obvious reasons.
Let me zoom in on that. All right. Okay, I see you now. Wow. So there was one. Yeah, you're right. Breasts on one and then 10,000 ribs on the US version.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Let us now discuss the seven categories for which we execute judgment on Astyanax. Category 1 is the narrative.
A reading from the manual. The girl is beautiful. Probably the most beautiful girl you have ever seen. But she seems sad or afraid. She is caught, trapped in some sort of bubble. And there is someone standing by her. Someone dark. Evil. She looks towards you and calls, Astyanax, Astyanax. And then you wake up. You are Astyanax, a 16-year-old student at Greenview High. And you haven't had a whole lot of sleep lately. A beautiful girl has been invading your dreams along with something sinister. She is being held captive. You're not sure where. All you know is you're running late for algebra and can't worry about strange fairy tales. Gate to Remlia. As you head home from school later that day, the questions of this morning appear again in your mind. Who is that girl, and who is keeping her in a bubble? You're so lost in thought, you barely notice the sky change colors, and the sun become a blinding ball of purple fire, and then everything goes black. This is a reading from the manual.
But one of the things that we should probably mention here is that this is indeed the reading from the manual, but the actual story only exists in the game. This is very expositional. Like, that's all this is. But the actual story is quite different than anything that was printed, I would say. The other thing we should discuss is that he is named after Astyanax from Greek mythology. which means High King or Overlord of the City. And when I did a little more research, all accounts of what happened to this person in Greek mythology tell the story of him being killed as a child during the Trojan War. So why the hell would you name a protagonist that? It's kind of confusing.
See, my gut says, well, they probably just found some sort of cool name that had the word axe in it, because that's your main weapon. Who knows? I mean, this was also a Japanese game first, and I'm not sure if you say axe the same way, so I'm yeah. totally wrong about that, but it's very convenient that a Steyn axe has the word axe in it, and your primary weapon is a battle axe.
And speaking of which, the other thing that I found very strange is that if you... So, I'm gonna go through my pros and cons before I get to this, because it's kind of related. My pros is it's actually a decent story for a Nintendo game. My cons is that it was delivered in the most slow way possible, to the point to where I would forget what was said the screen prior. It was that slow. So what I did was I went through and I edited out all the gameplay and just put all the cutscenes together, and I sped it up double the speed. And it played much better. I was able to retain what I was reading. One of the things, based on the fact that you mentioned the axe, that I found strange was that Cutie, the name of the fairy, called the weapon Bash. And that was the only time I've ever seen anything like that.
I mean, it's almost like a Lord of the Rings type thing where they name their weapons, right?
Yeah.
But then that threw me off as well, because they're saying that it's crucial that you use Bash. Bash is like the only thing that between saving the world and not. And yet you go through the game and start picking up other weapons. Yeah. All right.
Mm. Yeah, I feel very much the same as both of you about this in all regards. And now, I know that you thought it was a decent story, Archbishop. However, I didn't like the way they developed the relationship between Cutie and Steyn Axe. I thought, personally, that the sacrifice of Cutie was cheap and rushed. Like, she tried to make it seem like she was doing it for Steyn Axe. But really, wasn't she doing it to save Princess Rosebud because she knew that only Steyn Axe could do that? Like, wasn't this the reason she brought Steyn Axe here to begin with? But they just changed her motives, like, I'm doing this so you can get back to your world. Like, okay, little lady, but you know that if Steyn Axe dies, then it's all over and everything is for nothing. And I'll just say while I'm going here that I also didn't like how they resolved the story. Like, here you are, you can have a human relationship now as a gift from Princess Rosebud, Cutie, and Cutie is now resurrected as a human. And it's like, Steyn Axe is 16. Can we let that sink in for a moment?
Yeah.
I mean, Princess Rosebud, you basically just made your pet fairy this young boy's sex slave as a reward.
You're not wrong.
No.
You're not wrong. Now you make me look terrible for actually, like, thinking it was a decent story. And I will add, in context to other stories that have been on the NES.
I will agree with that. One of the pros that I have listed for this category is that there was definitely more effort put into the story than most stories for the Nintendo.
Mm-hmm. Also allowed you to skip the cutscenes too. Like, that's not like a given back in the day.
That's
true. You're right.
I mean, it's mentioned even in the manual. They must have known people would want to skip them if it's like literally like, hey, this is how you skip them. You know, I was thinking, just to redeem the story a little bit, do you think this could have been the predecessor to the Matrix? Think about it. Like, you're bringing in the Chosen One. Morpheus has to, like, sacrifice himself because Neo has to go on because he's the Chosen One. Huh? So, maybe.
It hits all those same foundation points of telling a decent story.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, but that, and that just definitely actually does give credit to the story, because, I mean, at least they, again, at least they tried.
Right.
They really did try to put together a story here. And that's more than what I can say for quite a number of NES games. The character development was extremely lacking for me. But, again, the fact that I can even talk about character development in an NES story is pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, the story in Marble Madness is garbage.
What is that broom that just appears and swipes you up after you get smashed to a billion pieces?
Yeah.
The broom?
Or the wand. The wand, like, there's the dustpan, and there's also the wand that comes out of nowhere and is like, yeah, I'm going to randomly gift you more time.
Yeah.
There's something happening, but they don't tell you one bit in the story.
Let us proceed to category two, which is the audio. I'm going to say that the audio is pretty middle of the road. There's not much to say. It's pretty forgettable because of how mediocre it is, in my opinion.
I thought it was so catchy. I like it. It has like it doesn't have like the best, like, I don't know, execution, but it does stick in your head. I mean, it's repetitive enough. That's probably maybe a con. It gets pretty repetitive. But when you get to a boss fight, it's like that's pretty cool.
To each his own, I suppose.
I think, much like the story, it was much better than a lot of NES games. I thought that there was a couple of memorable tracks. Pretty much, I'd say, like, the first level and the boss scenes, which I think mm-hmm. was pretty much the whole game anyway.
Pretty much.
But I thought, and this is a big pro, which you don't get a lot in NES games. Actually, you don't get a lot of this in games at all. But I thought that the soundtrack actually matched the gameplay pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, on the flip side, I thought that the music was tonally lacking. They definitely did not explore the full range of what they could achieve with the chipset.
That, I totally agree with. Like that. I think that's where I was trying to express, like, it kind of falls flat. Like, it has, like, mm-hmm. just a weird tonality to it, yeah.
And that's kind of my thought, too. It's, I listen to NES music all the time. And even when I'm not playing, I'll have it just playing in the background. And I don't, like, it's not one that I would keep on. I'd usually skip forward. So that's kind of what my basis is. Let us proceed to category three, which is gameplay.
A reading from the manual. There are three different weapons a Steinax can wield. Each weapon not only does a certain amount of damage to enemies, but also enhances a Steinax spell power and determines how much energy will be used when a Steinax casts a spell. A Steinax can use three different spells to aid him in his battles. Each spell uses a certain amount of spell energy and can only be used if there is enough energy left in the spell gauge. This is a reading from the manual.
I'll start off, gentlemen, if you don't mind. I'm going to say my pros first. I like the concept of a power meter on your attacks. I really like that. it felt great when you managed to get like the full power on an attack. That is my only pro.
Why?
And I have a list of things I want to discuss here. Your hit detection box is f***ing gigantic. making the concept of platforming effectively virtually impossible. I was taking damage from a boss when there was an entire body width of distance between me and the enemy, and I got hit and I died.
I can see you're angry about it, too.
Yeah, well, you can't imagine how many times I died, actually, because of something similar like that. Or because of something where it's like, oh, that guy's going to fly right over my head and not hit me. And then, bang, I get nailed. You know what I mean? It's like very strange how large your hitbox is, your hit detection box is. When jumping over a pit, it's not uncommon for enemies to spawn mid-jump on the other side, usually resulting in death. That happened a lot, and mostly it happened when I was first going to a new level. It's mostly like something that grew out of the ground, like a plant or a...
That's not random.
No, that's put there to kill you.
And it's trolley for sure.
Next is the spear is hot garbage. Incredibly weak for a power-up. This one I can't let go. This one really bothers me. A Steinax blocks seemingly randomly, making you lose control of the player character for a second or two. This isn't even mentioned in the manual. It just happens. There's no, you don't do anything. It just happens. And you're like, what's going on? I can't move. And then you move again. It's weird.
I don't even know if I know what you're talking about.
Really?
If you attack when there's something that's basically right on top of you, then you'll go into like a block pose.
Oh my god, I don't think I even experienced that. I went through the whole game. I don't think I noticed it.
Yeah, it definitely is there. It's just weird. It was just a weird thing. The different magic abilities feel arbitrary. I only used the default one.
Most the best one in my opinion as well.
Well,
so I'll let Jeff talk to this. Go ahead, Joe.
You're talking about the blast where it shoots out?
Yeah. That's the only one I used.
That's the best spell? I cheesed the whole game using the timeout spell.
Mm.
If you launch the timeout spell, you basically just speedrun the entire game. It almost uses no magic. And if you're using the right weapon, it uses even less magic. So every time there was like a hard part or a series of pits to jump over, you cast the timeout and nothing can spawn. So you're just jumping over all the pits like nothing's happening. I thought it made the game basically trivial.
Son of a
bitch. See, I took the hard road there.
I guess so.
Here's my last con. It takes forever to pull off an attack. That paired with waiting for the power meter to fill up means it can take about 1.5 seconds to pull off a worthwhile attack. Probably inherited from the arcade game where there's a similar functionality of a half second delay after hitting the attack button.
Yeah, if that does speed up as you pick up dexterity drops.
The fuck are you talking about?
We obviously all played a different game.
There's these pickups that drop. They are in the manual. You can find them there. They when you pick them up, your power meter fills up faster. And they are permanent. They are for the rest of the game. They almost look more like a badge than anything else. They're not really that descriptive.
Well, and there's also you randomly can meet Cutie, right? And she'll like give you some stuff.
Yeah, there's even a retro achievement for getting max dexterity.
Yeah, I think it doesn't. You can get the drops when you beat those statues, when you take down the statues.
Yeah, they're in the statues. I think I've actually also got them from... No, maybe you're right. Maybe they are only from the statues.
Well, here's the thing. I played through the whole game. but I didn't play through the entire in its entirety. I got to Marshy, that level Marshy, and I couldn't beat it. Every time I would get there, I couldn't beat it. So in order to experience the other levels, I used the level jump cheat code, and then I was able to experience the other levels. But I can honestly say that this con that I just said, without knowing about these dexterity drops, like that's half the game where where you have to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's definitely a huge learning curve. I think, although I agree with you that it was an interesting mechanic and it was fun in its own way, because it did prevent things like, you know, just button mashing, it was also frustrating when, you know, you get a good hit on something, but you know you didn't do much damage because, you know, you just already fired off an attack a second ago. So that was frustrating.
Yeah, I know. Like, oftentimes when there'd be, like, a larger enemy, like a skeleton or something, you're going to, like, try to save up a big bash attack, they would spawn some little dude that would come right in front of you that you'd have to use it first and waste your big attack, and then you got to start charging it again. Yeah.
Yeah, the place where I ran into that was when fighting skeletons.
Exactly.
You try to charge up your attack, but they can do a range attack where they fire that wave at you. And then you, like, get close and you try to attack, but then when you attack, you end up hitting the wave instead. And so all of your power's gone.
Yep.
On that wave. Yeah. But I also have jumping down as being pretty terrible. I think jumping and attacking is even worse than just the jumping. Like, the jumping itself, like, is you can live with that. But I think that the jumping and attacking is even worse because the timing, again, on the attack, like, I found it difficult to, like, jump and attack those floating green heads.
Yeah, the Metroids.
Yeah, those things were hard.
Yeah, that was really hard to get the timing on that.
There was one level in particular about the falling where you will just take a hit. There's no way you can't get around it. And I think that was in Rent. And can I just say, the names of the levels are completely uninspired. There's like Rent and like Grave and Marshy.
You know what's interesting about this is I just discovered that all those levels actually have full names. You're only seeing the first word in the name.
Where did you find this information?
I don't remember exactly. But like Rent is actually Rent Valley and Marshy is actually Marshy Swamp.
Okay, so that's worlds better. Like, are you kidding?
No. No, but I'm saying, like, it's obviously better than just Rent, right? Yeah. Like, at least you're saying, oh, I'm in a valley. It's not just like, if I have to play this level to pay my rent now, like, what's going on? Am I going to fight my landlord? That speaking of Rent, that third boss fight, the Stone Guardian in Rent, hands down the most difficult boss, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I was just talking with Mr. Gabor about that.
I want to review it again.
It was like the most random projectiles.
Yeah, his first form is very difficult. I always just take him out with magic for the first form.
Yeah. I think I use the same thing again, where I just use the timeout spell, because he just gets locked in place, and you're just like, whack, 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 it's over.
I've tried the timeout spell, and I couldn't get him. Like, it wasn't doing any damage. I don't know why. I also want to mention that I echo your frustration with the platform traps, with the enemies spawning. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that was definitely frustrating. Bad hitbox ranges with the weapons. It's almost like they tried to overcompensate. So, like, they recognized that the hitbox for the player was absolutely huge, and so they made the weapon hitbox that much bigger. Except for the spear. Which doesn't even look like a spear. That weapon, the spear, actually, if you look in the manual, it says it is the worst weapon. The only boon that it gives you is that you can cast more spells with it. It doesn't consume as much magic energy right. when you cast a spell. Everything else is just garbage about it. It's just it doesn't attack for as much, and yeah. So that's all I can say about that. The I thought that level 4-1, which is marshy,
mm-hmm.
Was the hardest and longest level in the game.
Yeah, that one was rough.
It's a hump. It's a hump in the game. If you can get past 4-1, then you should be able to beat the game.
Like I said earlier, I couldn't do it. I tried many, many times, and I could get there consistently, no problem. And I just can't do it. But like once I did that cheat code and jumped to the next level, I beat the game. Like it was just downhill from there.
Yeah, I think I got to Marshy Deathless without really having played the game much before, and then I just could not get past it. And then I had to cheese it with the timeout spell.
Maybe that's what I need to do. You have opened my eyes, Deacon Gabor.
I was going back to like the manual and stuff or gameplay, since we're talking about gameplay. It is cryptic. If you did not have the manual, how would you know that there's alternative spells to even use? Like yeah. it is like you have to hit pause and then hit select or up, or I don't know. I can't even remember now, but it's not intuitive. So that one, the only reason why I knew is because I'd seen the game played before. So I was like, I know there's other spells. I know how to, I just can't figure out how to do it. So I had to get the manual out and look at it. And then when it came to the maze at the very end of the level, I was like, how do you get in these doors? I could not figure it out. I was like up and B and A and B at the same time, start, select. I hit every button, every combination. I was like, I know you need to go in these doors. I had to break out the manual. And it's like, hold up for 5 seconds?
Yeah, like, three. What? Three seconds. That's long enough.
It is a long time. Long enough that like I didn't think to do it, because I'm like, well, I mean, I'm used like Mario, you press up, you go in. I'm guessing what they did is because like every major door you need to go in through, there's a skeleton guarding it, and I don't think they just want you to run through it, right? So that was their logic. Rather than coding, the door would open after you kill it, or some other thing. But anyways, that was,
yeah, I thought that the castle level, or the maze level as Cutie calls it, the castle maze, I don't remember, I thought that was horrible to navigate. I went through it cold, like just trying to figure out what all the doors did, essentially. Honestly, it was a miserable experience.
Yeah.
It's like every time that you go through a door, the wrong door, you like
start over.
More than likely, you're going back to the beginning. And I think maybe there's a couple of doors that don't bring you back to the beginning, but bring you back to like the previous room. But those aren't, there's like two of those.
Didn't you listen to what Cutie had to say? She said to pay attention to the signs.
Yeah, I did hear that, and I was like looking for a sign, and I'm like, there's no signs.
There is a sign. Every door you need to go through is guarded by a skeleton.
Yes, I did realize that eventually, but I was looking for an actual sign. I was looking at like the patterns on the walls, like
I did the same exact thing. I was looking at the torches and it was like I went through initially trying to figure it out on my own, and I was just like, what am I doing? Like,
she could have described that a little bit better.
If she said just look for the skeletons, that would have, or look for the red skeletons, that would have even been, I guess that would have been too much of a gimme. But yeah, I think I'd also like to mention another interesting point here, and this one really hit me hard. Last episode, we talked about Journey to Silius, and we mentioned that we thought that the mini bosses were harder than the bosses. And I feel like this game suffers from the same fate.
Same thing.
I feel like the mini bosses, most of the time, there are a couple of mini bosses that are super easy. Namely, the easiest one, hands down, is the slime that you fight outside the cave.
Is that the one that comes up and tries to like slam dunk your head?
Yeah. Yeah. He is by far the easiest mini-boss in the game. However, there are a number of mini-bosses that are actually really hard. You can't really fight them without getting hit. All of the ones that fly, I thought they were all difficult. specifically the lion and griffin one, the ones that morph stick. I'd say that's the hardest mini boss of all. You just have to take the hits. You have to.
I had a hard time with one of the flying ones. I want to say it's the one before the Medusa.
Yeah, that one's not easy either, although it has, I think it has less hit points than the Griffin one. I think what makes that one particularly difficult is the fact that it shoots at you.
Yeah.
At the same time that it's, you know, swooping and all that.
Let me butt in and say a little bit about the gameplay.
Okay.
I liked it a lot. I know that it had its problems that you guys went into in great depth, but when you consider like all like Nintendo games, it controls really well. You can jump, you can strike, you can duck. It has a variety of controls, has a variety of spells. You mix up the gameplay, has a variety of enemies. The music, I think, is good. You know, it does have its difficult areas, so like it definitely is hard, but it gives you all the tools and resources to be able to like go through. And to me, that makes it a pretty darn well-made gameplay, at least in my opinion. I liked it. Here's the thing that we haven't brought up. The unlimited continues. That redeemed the game to me. Like, if it would have been like, you get like three continues and the game resets, that would have been real rough. But you basically get to try it over and over and over and then over again until you're like, okay, I'm just going to use this spell here, this spell there. And even if you really are having a tough time with a level, you just get to try again and figure it out.
Wait, didn't I find a cheat that gave you unlimited continues? Unlimited
continues, yeah. So
it's going to say like 60.
Yeah, well, whatever the number was, it was a lot.
Yeah, I feel like because it was, we talked about the third level, right? How, like, the third level was tough.
Mm-hmm. Well, they also give you a lot of lives. Like, the, like every, like, 200,000 points or something, you get another life.
Yeah, right.
So unless you're, like, dying left and right, like, it actually takes a bit to get through a single continue. Yeah. They do accommodate for, you know, people trying to play through the game, I think. Yeah. Because I think there's so many games out there that, you're right, like, they're just, they're so unforgiving, and they're just like, oh yeah, you have three lives, three continues. You're never getting an extra life unless you like,
right,
do this crazy
thing. Well, and it was like there was the whole fighting the rental market, right? Like they took all the, like the, a lot of the US releases that ended up getting rehauled for our US rental, you know, economy, for better, lack of a better term, but they made them harder. And they, the easiest thing to do was to take out continues or screw you with the lives or checkpoints or whatever. And they didn't do that here. So it actually made for, like, I would actually replay this. Like, I thought it was fun. The one thing I do agree with you, though, Pete, like, you mentioned, like, jumping over pits and the constant spawning of enemies, like, right over a pit, that is super trolly. And that's just bad game design.
I'm going to play it again, too, because I want to see what the hell this bind spell's all about.
Yeah, I feel like it, yeah, it just cheeses the whole game. So. Yeah.
Maybe I could finally get through Marshy.
That, I mean, that was the only way. I think I tried to do it without it and kept... I literally, you just take enough itty-bitty little hits that they add up and you die. And that's... The game isn't really, you know, forgiving with the checkpoints. Like, you die, you're going back quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, that part's tough. I don't know. Two thumbs up from this guy of the gameplay.
Okay.
You heard it here, Deacon Gabor. Two thumbs up.
Yeah.
Let us proceed to category 4, which is graphics. The graphics for me are by far the best thing about the game, I would say. Mm-hmm. And heavily showcased during a commercial, like we already said. That's what snagged me as a kid. There was this cool moment in the cutscenes where they did an homage to Ninja Gaiden. Did you guys see that?
The parallax over the, like, the view of the castle?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That was awesome. Yeah. My only con for the graphics in this game is I really wish they would have kept the humanoid bug-like characters from the arcade game as enemies.
No, I agree with you. The graphics are awesome. The background work also is worth mentioning. Like, I like all the like the little eyes and the dragons and the statues everywhere. Like, it just there's a lot of detail work that keeps the mood going, and yeah, it's just really well done.
And it never competes with the foreground enemies and characters,
right?
You know, it's really, really nice.
The environment art is very good. The character art is done very well as well. I should say overall the graphics seem advanced for the NES. Generally speaking, there are times where if you're really not paying attention, you could almost think that maybe this might be a cheap SNES game. Really did well with that. However, I thought the animations were lacking, specifically for the main character. I kind of thought that the animations for the main character could have been better. Granted, they were probably eating up video memory for, you know, all the different types of enemies that they have in the game. I just feel like they might have been able to sacrifice maybe one or two enemies and get a few more frames of animation into the main character so he didn't look so stiff.
Yeah, it definitely was stiff. You know what actually the graphics and the animation remind me of is like an NES take on Splatterhouse.
There was an actual like Famicom version of Splatterhouse. But I see what you mean. You're comparing it to the TurboGrafx-16.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, big clunky character. Mm-hmm. The only thing that really did throw me, though, is during all the cutscenes, you're this like little wimpy-looking 16-year-old. And then you get into the gameplay, and you're huge.
Yeah, you're like this hulking mass of armor and muscle.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what happened, but he certainly changed forms.
Let us proceed to Category 5, Box Art and Presentation.
A reading from the back of the box. Sure, you've traveled some strange terrain in your video game journeys, but wait till you see where a Steinax takes you. In your pursuit of the evil wizard Blackhorn and his captive, Princess Rosebud of Remlia, you'll encounter terrors that would frighten the gods themselves. The dreaded Thorn Dog, with his heart of stone and face of bone, monstrous Caesar of the gremlin face and chicken feet, the endless maze of Castle Tyrrhenia, plus winged dragons and metamorphizing monsters, sorcerer's spells and wicked wizardry in a land that reaches far into the past and the future. It's the stuff myths are made of, a fantastic fight stretching eons beyond any game you've ever experienced. If you'd go to the ends of the earth for the ultimate adventure, a Steinax is your game. A reading from the back of the box.
I'm going to mention that if a word sounded strange to you while Father Avern was delivering the reading.
Or strange. If it sounded strange to you.
Right. It's because those are the actual typos on the back of the box. We made note of each typo. There's some throughout every form of printed media for this game. This is a continuation of the story that I told you earlier with the commercial. So after I saw that commercial and I was amped up and I wanted the game, and I went to my mother, I said, for Christmas, I really want a Steinax. And my mother would go out and get Christmas shopping done pretty early. So she came home and I was really excited. And I was like, if I know my mom, like this is how I'm going to know I got the game. If I ask my mother to wrap the game for me now, she never hid anything. So she would wrap like a shovel, like a shovel. You know what I mean? It would be the actual shape of a shovel. She'd do nothing to hide it. So what I did was I asked her, and she's like, okay. And she brought a couple packages down. She wrapped for a couple of us, and one of them was shaped exactly like a Nintendo game. And I even grabbed a box of one of my Nintendo games and like matched it up perfectly. I was like, yep, this is what it is. And then time went on. This was like probably like November sometime. And I got a little greedy and I said, you know what? I'm gonna unwrap this and read the box. And so she left one day with my brother and my sisters. And I was watching TV. I was like, if I'm very careful, I can unwrap this and read the box and like absorb it and put it right back the way it was. And I did that. And as momentous as that situation was and how shitty of a person I felt like after doing it, it was very anticlimactic for me. Yes, the pro being there were some really cool screenshots on the back of the box. The con being the really like weird sort of mishmash of words they put together on the back of it, and the sort of strange, like almost stained glass window feel of the front of the box, with like this big green, like almost looks like a Dragon Slayer type of dragon. Yeah, so it was very unremarkable for me. Interesting notes to make is that the full name of the actual game is Astyanax, the Warrior of Remilia. However, it's not written on the front of the box, on the manual, on the game itself. It's only written on the side of the box and the back of the box. Mm-hmm. It's so weird. Why they would do something like that? It makes no sense.
I thought that it was a clean style. Like, it wasn't a whole lot of noise in the box art. It's a, you know, white background, simple drawing. But let me stop there. Because you play a 16-year-old character, and I'm pretty sure that this front cover was drawn by a model student in art class who is 16 years old. It's not done very well. That's pretty much all I can say about that. I'm not an artist, but I can recognize good art. I never thought that this cover was done well. That and mentioning all the things about the text that I just read, the back of the box is kind of no different. It's just kind of good enough, and just kind of put out as good enough. Another thing is the main character, again, it's kind of echoes back to almost like Deadly Towers. The main character doesn't match.
No. The dragon doesn't match either.
The dragon doesn't match. You fight a dragon as the last boss, but it doesn't look anything like the front cover. But yeah, you could say, oh, well, the main character on the front matches the main character from the cutscenes. Okay, maybe. But it definitely doesn't match the character in game. You know, character in game, you have a helmet on the entire time. You know, you're not this nice little sword-wielding blonde boy on the front cover. So that's sort of a major disconnect for me. However, it did use game elements rather well. There's a lot of game elements on that front cover. You do fight a dragon eventually. They have the annoying little fairy, what's her name, cutie, flying around next to you. You see the princess in the bubble in the background, although I should mention that she looks nothing like Princess Rosebud from the cutscene. So just kind of strange, just kind of almost like it was done without any visuals from the game.
Quite possible that was the case.
Nah, I'm sure it was. Have you guys seen the Famicom box art?
No.
It's entirely different. It's like,
I have to look this up right now.
Is that
right
kind of like Deadly Towers?
Like it's better, but it's still insane proportions for a human being. But yeah, at least they're trying to hit the spirit of it. But this guy looks like he's maybe 48 years old.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he kind of looks like he's straight from a hair band. And retired from playing music and decided to enter the next bodybuilding competition.
Yeah, his bicep is larger than his head.
Well, you have to be, you know, that has to be the case if you're the Lord of King.
His deltoid alone is bigger than his head. That's pretty good. And neither cover features an axe. I think they missed
that. That's really funny.
And what can I just ask, what the hell is kind of weapon is he holding in this Famicom version?
A torch, I guess. If you look at the entire, like, there's a poster, which it shows the entirety of the artwork, then he's got an axe and a bunch of cool stuff. But,
if you look at this, I see a stick, because if that's a torch and those are flames, the flames are somehow jumping to the other side of his head.
Yeah. Yes. He is setting his hair on fire. Maybe he has so much hairspray that it just burns the hairspray and doesn't touch him.
Wow.
The box art in the Famicom version, I would say, honestly, reminds me of like a Sega Genesis type of style, actually.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's box art and presentation.
Yeah, a mess.
Let us proceed to category 6, which is Fun Factor. Even though I had a long list of issues with it, I still kept playing. And it wasn't like I hated the process of playing the game. So I would say it's a success from that point of view. The cons being, you could get all the way to the end of a level, defeat the mini boss, go to the actual boss, fight this boss, die, and go all the way back to the beginning. I mean, we just covered Journey to Silius and where they did it, where if you got to the boss, then you got a chance to fight the boss again immediately. And I thought that was really successful by comparison. This makes it a little bit more frustrating, I would say.
Fun factor for me, I didn't have any problems here. I did have some struggles learning the workarounds for some of the crappier parts of controlling a Steinax, but I did have fun with the game overall.
Yeah, I dug it, actually. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that I got that timeout spell working so well that I was able to kind of like head through the game. It was like one of those games where I was like, oh man, I don't know how much time I'm going to be able to devote to get through this game. Let me turn it on. It's like 45 minutes later. All right, that was fun.
That's you with every game, Jeffrey Gabor.
But I think I had seen enough, like, other people kind of speedrun. I was like, people seem to take advantage of whatever this timeout thing is. Let me give it a shot. And it was like, okay, yeah, I can see why people cheese it. So, if I had any issue, it was like, it did seem like that issue of dying at a boss, especially the final boss, because there's a boss rush right before it, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
If you get all the way through the boss rush, go through the first form of the last guy, fight the dragon and die on the dragon, you're all the way back to the start of the boss rush.
Yes, that took me quite a while.
Yeah, that was super annoying, and it felt like it was only in there because of the lack of overall content to the game. So they were like punishing you just try to get longer life out of the game. So not a huge fan of that, but
that was the case for a lot of games back then.
Yeah, yeah, they increased difficulty to make up for a short game, yeah. But no problems outside of that.
Let's proceed to category 7, which is technical. So I didn't experience any slowdown or flickering, really. So that was nice. But I will say the hit mechanics are kind of borked. There was one time where I got hit by a projectile and I was facing a pit, and the projectile came to me from across the pit. Rather than reacting backwards where I came from, I actually lunged forward and fell in the pit. Mm.
Yeah, the hit detection was crazy. I would just sit there and like go up to enemies. Yeah, I didn't know. It's like, you know, when you play Mega Man, like, you know your bullet's gonna hit that guy. Like, it feels good. You know when you're Mario, you're gonna stomp on a character's head. This, you're just like randomly kind of stabbing in front of you and hoping somehow the hit detection picks up and kills the skeleton. It doesn't really connect well.
Hmm. Totally agree with that. I was gonna say that I don't have any issues here except for the hitboxes. There may have been some collision detection issues with the code, but I think in regards to the size of the hitboxes, I really think that was more of a design choice than a technical one. I really think if there were any issues here, it was definitely with whatever collision detection they were using. So definitely a strike against them for that. I didn't have any issues with bugs or things behaving differently from what I would expect. But the jumping physics were horrible.
Yeah.
Overall, it could have been worse. but there were definitely physics issues and collision detection issues.
Let us proclaim the hints and cheats of our game.
A reading from the manual. To teleport through a door in the castle Terenia, press the up portion of the control pad when a Steinax is standing in the doorway. The up arrow must be held for 3 seconds to successfully teleport. Free men are awarded at 100,000 points, 200,000 points, 400,000 points, and every 200,000 points thereafter. A reading from the Steinax manual.
I would just like to point out that this manual offers free men to whoever plays the game. When you get free men, I've never heard it put that way. And also, I'd like to point out that the horrible math here, because they say 100,000, 200,000, and they could have just stopped there and said in every 200,000 points thereafter, but they decide to put 400,000 in there. As if they don't realize that that's 200,000 points after 200,000. I did have down here as a note, to get through the castle maze level, always go through doors guarded by a red skeleton, but we already mentioned that.
Yep.
And then I think, Archbishop, you discovered a lot of these other ones listed here.
Like I said, I used some cheats to get to not only the... through Marshy, which was an abomination of a level, but to get to the actual original cutscenes at the end of the game that displayed the credits in Japanese. They have what is called a demo select menu, and that is what you have to access in order to see the end sequence. I'll just say them really quickly. There's continuous AB select start when your game is over. Demo select, which is the demo select menu, like I said, is up, up, down, down. AB start. Invincibility is up 4 times, down, left, right, up, start on the title screen. Level select is up, down, left, right, B 4 times, start on the title screen. The sound test is up, down, right, left, up, down, right, left, start. And to view the ending credits, you go BBAABA, up, down, start on the demo select menu. So not only do you have to like use a cheat to get to the demo select menu, but you have to also put in a code on that menu to get to those ending credits.
And now, brethren, let us offer each other the body of Christ.
In 1990, it was approximately $19.95, according to the 1990 Sears catalog. According to data.bls.gov, the CPI inflation calculator, 1995 in 1990 is worth about $45.87 in 2023. The price of the game now, I think this might actually be, so far, the cheapest game that we've reviewed. Loose copy, $7.57. Box only, $15. Manual only, $7.20. Complete in box, $32.74. And brand new sealed, $249.77. So this is actually one of the few games where to buy it complete in box, you're actually paying less than what the inflation calculator said you would have paid full price back then.
Hmm. Interestingly enough, though, I did find a flyer, or more than one, that had the game listed at $9.95. Hmm. And it makes me wonder, if I looked closely at those large vats of games back when I picked up Journey to Silius and Rolling Thunder for $9.95, if a Steinax was in there too.
Very well may have been.
Yeah.
In the bin.
In the bin. Let us now execute judgment upon a Steinax and decide which of the seven cardinal sins it has committed. Father Avram, in regards to narrative, what is your final judgment?
In regards to narrative, a Steinax has committed no fault.
Deacon Gabor, in regards to narrative, what is your final judgment?
In regards to narrative, a Steinax has committed no fault.
In regards to narrative and in the presence of this assembly, a Steinax has been spared. Father Avram, in regards to audio, what is your final judgment?
In regards to audio, a Steinax has committed no fault.
Deacon Gabor, in regards to audio, what is your final judgment?
In regards to audio, a Steinax has committed no fault.
In regards to audio and in the presence of this assembly, a Steinax has been spared. Father Avram, in regards to gameplay, what is your final judgment?
In regards to gameplay, a Steinax has committed a most heinous cardinal sin.
Deacon Gabor, in regards to gameplay, what is your final judgment?
In regards to gameplay, a Steinax has committed no fault.
In regards to gameplay and in the presence of this assembly, a Steinax has committed a loathsome cardinal sin deserving of hellfire and damnation. Father Avram, in regards to graphics, what is your final judgment?
In regards to graphics, a Steinax has committed no fault.
Deacon Gabor, in regards to graphics, what is your final judgment?
In regards to graphics, a Steinax has committed no fault.
In regards to graphics and in the presence of this assembly, a Steinax has been spared. Father Avram, in regards to box art and presentation, what is your final judgment?
In regards to box art and presentation, a Steinax has committed a most heinous cardinal sin.
Deacon Gabor, in regards to box art and presentation, what is your final judgment?
In regards to box art and presentation, Steinax has committed a most heinous cardinal sin.
In regards to box art and presentation, and in the presence of this assembly, a Steinax has committed a loathsome cardinal sin deserving of hellfire and damnation. Father Avram, in regards to Fun Factor, what is your final judgment?
In regards to Fun Factor, a Steinax has committed no fault.
Deacon Gabor, in regards to Fun Factor, what is your final judgment?
In regards to Fun Factor, Steinax has committed no fault.
In regards to Fun Factor and in the presence of this assembly, a Steinax has been spared. Father Avram, in regards to technical, what is your final judgment?
In regards to technical, a Steinax has committed a most heinous cardinal sin.
Deacon Gabor, in regards to technical, what is your final judgment?
In regards to technical, Steinax has committed no fault.
In regards to technical and in the presence of this assembly, a Steinax has committed a loathsome cardinal sin deserving of hellfire and damnation. A
Steinax, by the authority invested in me, we redeem you of any faults which you have committed, and hereby revere you as a jewel in the crown of the Nintendo Entertainment System.
This concludes this evening's service. Remember, our liturgy does not simply come to an end. Those assembled are sent forth to bring the fruits of the ministry to the world.